Paul Charchian, one of our favorites, joins us every Thursday. By the way, it will be in this 11 a.m. time slot moving forward. Gives us a little bit more time with Charch. Of course, Charch is a fantasy football expert for years, the director of Guillotine Leagues at FantasyLife.com. He's got podcasts called Fantasy Football Weekly and CHOP. You can get those wherever you get your podcasts, and you can follow him on X, on Twitter, at Paul Charchian. You know, for all of the years that you've been coming on this radio station, whether it's, you know, was with me, it's been with me, but, you know, for years with Zabe and Andy and Scott Lynn, etc., we've never really had a football team like the one that we have right now in D.C. The excitement level, Charch, for Jaden Daniels and the team is off the charts. I just asked a question, and we took calls for a couple of segments. How many quarterbacks right now, for the present and the future, let's just look ahead 5 years, in the NFC would you take ahead of Jaden Daniels right now? I know the sample size is small, but just what's your gut answer on that? How many would you take?
NFC only. Boy, it's not going to be a long list. Because I got a plan for the future right now as well, right? So I get Jaden Daniels is, what, 23 years old?
Yep.
I'm struggling to come up with one NFC passer
Dak,
that I would absolutely take first. No,
Jordan Love. I mean, I'm a Jordan Love fan. I think he's going to be special, especially with Matt LaFleur. You know, Dak, Jordan Love, Jared Goff, who, by the way, is only 29. You know, our guy is too old. He's 30. You know, he's going to be 36 years old.
Yeah, Kirk's not in this conversation.
No. I don't personally put, you know, Purdy into this conversation. I don't. Matt Stafford's too old at this point.
Yeah, for sure. And here's why Dak's out. His contract. I mean, you get the luxury of a rookie contract for at least, like, you know, 2 more years, and then he'll have, you know, then Jaden Daniels will become the highest paid quarterback in the NFL if he stays at this rate. And, you know, the sample size is incredibly small. The safer play would be to say Brock Purdy, who, where you get young and you get a really good passer who I think is totally overlooked. I mean, right now, he's second in passing yards in the NFL. You know, nobody ever talks about Brock Purdy as an elite passer. I think he would be, when I factor in age and contract, I think Purdy would also be in this conversation. Let me ask you this on Daniels. This came up on a different show I was doing. If for some horrifying reason Washington had decided to roll over their coaching staff, I think Jaden Daniels wouldn't be the same guy if this were a Ron Rivera, Eric Bieniemy-led offense and coaching staff. I don't know that we'd be seeing the same kind of success, and I think Cliff Kingsbury should be getting a ton of praise for the way that he's managed the early development of Jaden Daniels.
Oh, yeah, 100% true. I mean, keep in mind, I mean, you know, if you rolled over the coaching staff, that probably meant the old owner was here, which means you would have taken, you know, you would have traded, you know, 4 firsts and 3 seconds to move up to take Caleb Williams because he's a local kid. No, but let me just tell you, there was never a chance of any of those people coming back. You know, head coach, offensive coordinator was a disaster here last year, too. You would have had half the offense begging for a trade had he come back. It wouldn't have been the same, but I'm not taking anything away from the kid. I mean, Kingsbury has a pretty good student right now, pretty talented.
He really does. Now, we're entering phase two for Jaden Daniels, where defensive coaches now have compiled 4 games of tape to see what Jaden Daniels wants to do, what comes naturally to him, what are his tendencies and his habits. And then defensive coordinators and players will start to try to take those things away and see if Jaden Daniels can adapt. And we'll find out. This is a new phase that he's entering right now, as short as this is. And we'll find out if Daniels has developed secondary and tertiary skills beyond what he naturally wants to do. I think he's going to be okay, and I love that it started with a lot of short completions for Daniels, and then Cliff Kingsbury has opened up the field for Daniels over these last two games. Get this, on passes of longer than 15 yards, I don't think you'll know this stat, with all the talk of Jaden Daniels there, on passes of longer than 15 yards, Jaden Daniels is already up to 7th in completions and number 1 in completion percentage.
Yeah, well, and I mean, he's so far ahead of everybody in just overall completion percentage.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You know this. It was the greatest four-game start in history.
82%. 82%. Yeah. But I think a lot of that was built in those first two games. It was all short stuff.
But his completion percentage in the last two games was 21 of 23 and 26 of 30. So
I know, but what I'm saying, Kevin, is it was also on longer passes in these last two games.
Exactly.
And I think that's what's so amazing is the deep passes are connecting as well. And it's not just building a completion percentage record on 4-yard passes, bubble screen, stuff like that.
I think your point's a good one about, you know, defensive coordinators, defenses having a bit of a book on him and getting a read. I think the other part of it, too, is, you know, they've got a Cleveland defense, which is very talented with Jim Schwartz as their coordinator. Mm-hmm. They've got a Baltimore defense the next week. They have Pittsburgh down the road. They have New Orleans down the road. They're going to face just flat out better defensive teams than Arizona, a banged-up Cincinnati team. The Giant defense is talented, but it's struggled a little bit this year. Tampa was really a good week one test, but it's also week one. You know, I think you kind of throw out week one every year as a head fake across the board. So, yes, the adjustment to him, and then just the next 2 weeks are going to be interesting for me, because Arizona was not very good defensively. They had been gashed in the run the week before by Detroit. Mm-hmm. Good offensive line. You get, you know, Baltimore a week from Sunday is going to be very interesting. Anyway,
that'll be a very big test. That'll be a litmus game right there. You'll know.
No doubt. Because the conversation has changed here. Now, I was somewhat bullish. You know, I went out on a limb, and I will tell you, it was somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but I had a really good, you know, opinion of Jaden Daniels. I was a big fan, and I thought it could happen sooner rather than later. Not this, of course. Nobody had this. But it's a conversation changer the first four games about this season. You know, this season, especially looking at the division, is in play now, where for a lot of people, you know, just 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, you know, it was, hey, let's go 6-11, but find out that we've got a really good quarterback. That's out the window. Mm-hmm. Now we're 3-1. Why not us in the division? And why not us? Yeah.
Why not? I mean, you know, Philly looks as vulnerable as they have in the Jalen Hurts era. And the Giants are probably non-factors, and the Cowboys are all over the map. No consistency there. Why not? It's, you know, your secondary might be the answer to why not. It might just be that, but played obviously a lot better last week. Shockingly well last week.
Did you guys see, by the way, this could have been just a video taken out of context, the Jerry's helicopter landing on the practice field while practice was going on, so they had to essentially interrupt practice yesterday to let the helicopter land? Like, that is
That's
dysfunctional
absurd organization.
And it's now okay for people in Washington to say that because we're not dysfunctional anymore. We used to be the number one dysfunctional organization in all of sports, but our old, you know, super intense arch rival is dysfunctional. All right, let's get to some fantasy talk, and let's just talk about the Ravens and Derrick Henry. What do you do there when you have Lamar Jackson, when you have Zay Flowers, when you have any of their pass catchers?
Yeah, they're getting killed by Derrick Henry, who's so good that the whole game scripts are just rendering the passing game completely inert. The tight ends are completely dead to us. I've dropped Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely in all the leagues in which I had them, and they're not even part of this passing game. Get this. Mark Andrews, who, by the way, highest scoring fantasy tight end 2 years ago. We're 1 year removed from that. The last two games, he ran 6 routes and 10 routes and did not catch a pass in either game. Starting Mark Andrews is more dangerous than hosting a PTA meeting at Diddy's house. We love Zay Flowers.
Not good.
A good receiver does not matter.
Although you might have a lot of baby oil in the house already.
Well, that's a great point.
He doesn't have to bring it.
You don't have to bring your own. We love Zay Flowers, good receiver, just stuck in a bad spot. Baltimore's run-heavy offense ranks 32nd in passing play percentage. 32nd. They're just not passing the ball because they don't have to. And, you know, Zay Flowers is a great player. They just don't have to target him. The tight ends are dead. Lamar Jackson keeping his head above water, despite the fact he's only thrown 15 and 18 passes the last 2 weeks.
I know.
But the running is keeping him fantasy viable, but none of the receivers.
You know, I want to just bounce around the league here in kind of similar situations. Like in Kansas City at this point, I mean, my starting quarterback is Patrick Mahomes. I actually have Geno Smith as a backup, and I probably should be starting Geno Smith. Who, by the way, Charge, I've said this a couple of times this week. I'm watching Monday night, and I've said this previously in the last year or two. He's a really good quarterback.
Are you referring to the NFL's passing leader right now?
Yes,
you
know, I am. I know maybe that's not out on a limb, but I don't think people realize how good Geno Smith can be.
Correct. Absolutely agree. And Ryan Grubb, their new offensive coordinator, so smart for Seattle to move on from the coaches that they had, and Shane Waldron in particular, who's really struggling in Chicago now. Ryan Grubb looks like a guy requisite to really bring Geno Smith to the next level right now. They're passing a ton. Geno has more attempts and more completions than any quarterback. In fact, he's got 20 more completions than the next closest quarterback.
Well, what's the attempt difference?
The attempt difference is 10. The completion difference is 20.
Okay.
Yeah, and and God bless him. I mean, this offense looks really, really good. We're starting to see Jackson Smith and Jigba turn into the player we thought he could be in his second year, and DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, all really good as well. And Kenneth Walker, 3 touchdowns last Monday night.
Dude's a beast.
Yes, if Seattle didn't have a bottom like 5 offensive line, this thing would be so scary. And maybe it'll start to come together on that line. But they look terrific, and I agree with all the points you're making about Geno not recognized for the great play that he's getting right now.
So back to the Chiefs with Rashee Rice out. You know, how do you view Travis Kelce now? How do you view some of their other receivers? Do you knock down just Patrick Mahomes because there's no Rashee Rice? Because Rice really was, I mean, he had developed into a pretty damn good receiver.
He had. I mean, like one of the probably 10 best receivers and arguably the single best receiver after the catch with the possible exception of being like Deebo Samuel. I think that was your 1 and 2 right there. Yeah. It is, he was that good. And you can't, if you take away the best player from a passing offense, and I know there's Patrick Mahomes, he's the best receiver. And by the way, he might even be the best player the way Patrick's playing right now, which is not great. I don't think that helps anybody, even Travis Kelce, because defenses come in, and when Rashee Rice is there, every opposing defense had to contort what they wanted to do to take away the unique skill set of Rashee Rice, who consistently would turn a 6-yard slant into an 18-yard game. He'd break one tackle. Now he's off and running. Now, without Rice and get the limited talent that they've got at wide receiver, even with the prospect of Xavier Worthy, I don't think this helps because defenses get to play the Chiefs more straight up, and now they can send even more coverage to Travis Kelce, especially over the middle, which is where Rice did so much of his damage and where Travis Kelce is always rumbling, you know, like 8-10 yards downfield is where you always see Travis Kelce. That was a problem with Rice because that was where Rice was, and defenses had to account for that. I worry now defenses are just going to further collapse on Travis Kelce, and I wonder if we're not going to see more of the same middling returns on Kelce that we've seen this year.
I have a question for you about the Giant receivers. And is Malik Nabers going to play this week or not?
We don't know. He did not practice yesterday. I haven't seen a report on Nabers so far this week and today. But this is up in the air. And if you take Malik Nabers out of that Giants offense, there's not much left. I mean, Wendell Robinson becomes your go-to receiver in that.
Well, offense. That's what I was going to ask you about, is that last week, both of those guys had double-digit receptions against Dallas. And by the way, Wendell Robinson, correct me if I'm wrong, had three flat-out drops in that game on Thursday night. You know, I don't even know what Daniel Jones ended up being in that game. I don't want to talk about his performance qualitatively, but just numbers-wise, he was 29 of 40 for 281, but I think Wandale Robinson had three flat-out drops. Two of them were going to go for big yardage. But what do you – like, I have Wandale Robinson. I mean, do I – if Malik Nabers doesn't play against Seattle, am I not starting Wandale Robinson one of my flex position guys?
Yeah, so Robinson, I'm looking right now. I just pulled it up. He was credited with two drops. It doesn't mean
two
the
drops.
Third was not a drop, but you know they technically called it two. Here's the thing that kills you on Robinson. He has, for all the catches he's got, by the way, 26 catches.
Yeah.
25 of the 26 are for 7 yards or less.
I know that. There's a lot of bubble. There's a lot of quick hitches. But you know what?
Yep.
There have been so many times in watching him where he's so close to a big play. Mm-hmm. Like the one over the middle that he dropped on their final drive or next to final drive, that was a 30-plus yard play. I mean, there was nothing in front of him. So, yeah. But anyway, back to Nabers. How much does that affect anybody else that you have on that offense?
So Robinson, because he runs almost entirely from the slot and gets the unique coverage from a slot defender, I don't think losing Nabers hurts him as much as it would hurt others. And, you know, Nabers, you know, what we love about Nabers is he siphons off so much defensive attention that you think that might help Robinson. But I still think Robinson gets a straight up sort of normal matchup against a slot defender. And so I guess I'm not as worried about it for him as I might be for other people. It's Seattle here, right? Seattle, it's Giants-Seattle, correct?
Yeah, yes. Giants at Seattle.
Giants at Seattle. That's a...
Seattle's Giants defense banged up.
They have some good cornerbacks. That's that does worry me just a little bit, I guess.
Real quickly... maybe this is out there somewhere. It probably is, but I haven't seen it. Is Malik Nabers off to maybe the greatest start for a rookie receiver of all time?
No, Randy Moss would like a word.
Okay, but numbers-wise, yes. Moss had more than 35 catches.
Yeah. Well, you know, Moss was doing it on fewer catches for sure.
But bigger plays.
Bigger plays. I mean, Moss was, you know, he was hauling in 30, 40, 50, 60, 70-yard touchdowns. And, you know, I don't know. I haven't seen anything definitive on that. But Nabers has to be in the conversation for the most productive rookie ever through four games on just sheer numbers. I don't think anybody saw this coming. Let me give you some Nabers stats on this to just get a sense of the level of just play domination that he's getting. He, in his four games so far, in terms of routes run, he has run 100%, 90%, 93%, and 93% of New York's routes.
Wow.
I mean, the guy is on the field like every single pass play, and he's currently getting 39% of the team's targets going to one guy. If you don't know, that's an incredibly high number. Other great receivers are typically in the 20s, and to have a 39% target share is just gigantic. And air yards, 52% of the air yards are going to Malik Nabers. Staggering numbers.
Real quickly, because you're a Minnesota guy, you're a Twin Cities guy. Mm-hmm. Was Moss's rookie year the year they played the Cowboys on Thanksgiving and he had that monster game?
It was. It was. It was great.
And so Randall Cunningham was the quarterback.
That's right.
Okay.
He was. And that was the national breakout game where I think everybody saw Moss. And it was only three catches, but it was like 170 yards on three catches in that game, including one of the great sideline deeks of all time where he catches the ball 20 yards downfield and he's got one man to beat down the left sideline. He does a stutter step, freezes that guy, and just runs right past him. Oh, it's great. That's the most fun Thanksgiving I've had in my entire life.
Actually, the most fun Thanksgiving we had was RG3's rookie year. He threw four touchdowns in the first half in Dallas. But damn that Gary Anderson, huh? Because he had the little short chip shot to go to the Super Bowl.
And all he had done, if you recall, was make 100% of his field goals all season long until the one he had to make to send the Vikings to the Super Bowl, and he missed.
You know, I'm pretty sure that was 98, right?
98, yes.
That's a 98 season. I'm pretty sure
it was rookies. It was Moss's rookie year, so it was 98. It was into the playoffs of Moss's rookie year, yes.
Yeah. But the 98 season is Moss's rookie season, and I'm pretty sure, and I'm pulling it up right now, I just want to make sure it was that year, because they annihilated Washington, and that was that was the final year. That was the final season before Dan Snyder took over as an owner. But they finished that season super strong with Trent Green at quarterback.
Really?
Anyway, yeah. And then they went and traded for Brad Johnson during the offseason.
That was a 41-7 drubbing against your team in that season. And that, Randy Moss, let's take a look. Randall Cunningham threw for 259 and 2. Robert Smith ran for 100 yards and a touchdown. And Leroy Horde knocked in a couple of scores in that game. Randy Moss.
My guest coming up next hour, boys and girls, Gus Frerotte was the starting quarterback in that game.
Gus Frerotte was
in Minnesota.
He went on to start for Minnesota, too.
I know. Gus had a 15-year career as a seventh-round pick, Charch, the same year they picked Heath Shuler at number 3 overall, and it became pretty clear to pretty much everybody in the building after a few practices that actually Frerotte was better. But anyway, we digress. Real quickly, back to fantasy, because people want some information. Before we get to tonight's game, first opportunity, just where do you have Jaden Daniels right now on your quarterback ranking list for this weekend?
I gave him his quarterback 2. So, I mean, it's come to this, how fast, that we've got a rookie sitting that high. And it's not like Cleveland's a bad opponent. They've got an amazing pass rush led by Myles Garrett. He's got 20 quarterback hurries already, or pressures already. Cleveland ranks 3rd in pass rush win rate. I don't care. I'm just Jaden Daniels, he'll find a way to cobble together a great fantasy game. So, yeah, at this point,
who's your quarterback one? Is it Allen?
That's a great question. Let's take a look. My quarterback one this week is Darnold's got a brutal matchup with the Jets, so I can't go there.
Yeah,
it's Lamar Jackson. It's Lamar Jackson against the Bengals, and then Jaden Daniels is 2.
Ranked high for Washington? Terry?
I've got this. I got this whole game already mapped out. I'm happy to say. Let's see here. I haven't broken down this. Normally, I do break down your squad because I like to. Because I know you and I might end up talking about it. Love to get Austin Eckler back. Now, do we know Brian Robinson's going to go? Right.
Yeah, he missed practice yesterday. I think he'll be fine. But Jeremy McNichols had a huge game.
He looked good. Didn't he look great? So, but I assume Eckler will go back to his role and that McNichols will go back to his traditional role, which is the bench. Assuming Eckler plays in this one. So, I remain optimistic there. Now, I assume that your callers are talking about Devontae Adams because there's no better, more logical landing place than Washington.
Go ahead. Give us your thoughts. We spent all yesterday's show talking about that.
I've got like 5 reasons it makes sense. You're one of the few teams that has the cap space to take on the salary, and they'll redo his deal. But he'll still need like 3 years and, you know, $80 million. I mean, so, you know, you have to have the cap space. You have to be a winning team. I mean, why else do you bring on a veteran, older receiver if you're not going to put him into a spot for a team that thinks it can win? And that's your team right now. We already talked about the fact that your team can easily win this division. So there's that. You got to pair him with a quarterback who can put him to good use. That certainly appears to be the case with Jaden Daniels. You need to have a need at number two receiver. And boy, do you have a need at number two receiver. You might have the worst number two receiver situation in the league. So we'd walk in right there and become just a massive, massive upgrade at the second receiver spot. And he'd ultimately help Jaden Daniels so much with the separation that he gives you. He will catch everything that comes to Devontae Adams. And what he would do to help Terry McLaurin would be remarkable as well by taking some of the heat off of him. Devontae Adams is still good. Remember, the Raiders beat Baltimore on the road three mm-hmm. games ago, largely because Devontae Adams was heroic at the end of the game. The dudes can still play. I'd love it if he fell into Washington.
So everything you said is true. All right, and trust me, I have people that actually argue the greatness of Devontae Adams with me because they so don't want this move made. Everything you say is true, and by the way, he'd be the number one receiver here. Terry would be the number two. I mean, Devontae Adams is a truly elite receiver. But here's why I said no, Charge. Devontae Adams, when you make a move in season for Devontae Adams, it's an all-in to win the whole thing move because he's going to be turning 32 years old. The 2 years left on his contract are big, high cap numbers. More likely than not, he's on the other side of the best years of his career starting next year, the year after. So I personally would not do it. And this team actually needs defense. I also said, look, if they beat Cleveland and they beat Baltimore and they're 5-1, this could be a completely different conversation because they may mm-hmm. be in we can win it all mode at that point. But let's see that happen first. They need defense is what they need if they get into a position where they're thinking, hey, we could actually get to the Super Bowl in the NFC with a better corner, with a Hassan Reddick, at the trade deadline. But nothing you said about the player and what he would mean to the team that he gets traded to is wrong. I agree with that.
Yeah, you're right about this. If you signed him, let's just say hypothetically, it is 3 years, $80 million. You'd regret it in 2 years. You know, Adams at that point is going to be, he's 34.
And that's when maybe they're on the verge of legitimately contending for something deep into January.
Mm-hmm. Well, things change fast in the NFL. Look at the Vikings.
I agree.
Your timeline is 3 years out.
100% agree with that. Every time I even try to have a conversation about, the NFL is not built that way. When you have a team, you got to take advantage of the situation you are in, and it happens all the time that teams that had no thought of contending for something end up contending for something, and it's just it's too weak to weakish. But the other aspect of this, Church, is that, early in the season, Terry wasn't really getting, a lot of the targets. And Cliff Kingsbury made it very clear. We want Jaden to go where his reads take him. Mm-hmm. We're not a force feed a receiver offense. And all due respect to Terry McLaurin, who's a very good receiver, is not a force feed receiver. Devontae Adams is. And so if you bring him into this right now, does he say, hey, I need 12 targets. I need 10 targets a game. And does that become disruptive? Who knows? All right. Real quickly on tonight. I have Kyle Pitts. He's been an absolute zero this year. Something's not right with him beyond. There seems to be an effort issue when you watch him, I think. Tell me about the matchup tonight.
I think for Kyle Pitts, in the history of the fantasy football industry, which I've been a part of for a long time, I don't think we experts have ever been more conclusively and extensively wrong about any player more than Kyle Pitts. Mm. Because he entered the draft as an exciting young prospect, and then we suffered massive confirmation bias when the Falcons picked him at pick 4 of the draft.
Right.
And we spent 3 years blaming Arthur Smith for not getting more out of him. He's doing less now with Arthur Smith gone. You know, Pitts ranks 19th among tight ends in yards, 27th in receptions. You're getting more productivity out of Zach Ertz there. And the problem for Pitts, a lot of it is effort. I think it was Warren Sharp who tweeted all of Pitts's looks in the last week's games. Pitts is just, he's loafing through his routes. Not running with any sense of urgency or speed. He's not, his brakes are terrible.
Yeah.
He's completely covered. This is a Pitts problem, and it is lethal in fantasy because he's giving you so little to work with, that you're taking zeros at that spot, and that's how you lose fantasy games.
Yeah, so, I mean, watching him, he looks disinterested when he's out there. Only way to describe it, which is frustrating when you're rooting for you-know-who, his quarterback.
Right.
All right, what else?
Let me mention this just because I know we were talking trades about your team and people that you could acquire, and this is going to sound super boring compared to bringing in Devontae Adams. Maybe a more reasonable solution that would cost you almost nothing. Guys like, and the Patriots are sellers, DeMario Douglas and KJ Osborne are competent NFL slot receivers that could walk into your team and help right away and cost you like a sixth rounder or a seventh rounder. And that's super boring, but that's something that is more reasonable and on the table and won't set the team back on cap or draft picks.
Yeah, I mean, the reason the DeMario Douglas thing I like is because he is super young. I love KJ Osborne, but I got to tell you, I think they actually really like Luke McCaffrey. I think they see a guy that gets separation. He hasn't been targeted a lot. There have been missed opportunities.
No.
He had a big-time catch the other day, but I think they really like McCaffrey. And the other guy that's actually stepped up and played some pretty good football since they traded for him at the end of preseason is Noah Brown. I hear you. I think right now this team is so prolific through four games, not that it'll continue at this rate. Where they're really struggling, Charch, is defensively. And even last week's improved performance, they got absolutely gashed on the ground. And that could be a problem if Nick Chubb is back this week, and certainly against Baltimore in 2 weeks.
Go get a cornerback would probably be really the right answer here. Yeah, by the way, you could hit the Patriots for that too. They're just, they're giving away players.
Right.
Their season is lost. So I think they're looking for picks.
It is lost, but the Jet game I kind of throw out there, but they've been tough and competitive under Gerard Mayo.
There isn't an effort problem. I'll grant
no, there
you
is
that.
Not an effort
Patriots
problem
try.
There at all. I'm wondering when we'll see Drake
problem.
May at this point. I mean,
can't do Brissett, it. Can't
Brissett's
do
been
it.
Fine, but this season is going to be lost here shortly. When does he put Drake May into the game?
Never. If he's smart, not this year. Their offensive line is destroyed by injury. All you will do is reset the clock if you bring Drake May in, and you might wreck that kid. I wouldn't let him near this offense. I view it as poison, and only bad can come from putting Drake May behind this offensive line with throwing the ball to Jalen Polk. I think you would hurt him more than you'd help him, and I would let Drake May sit the entire year if it were up to me.
All right, I got to run. You're the best. Thanks.
I know.
Enjoy
we've
football.
Talked for a half hour. It's crazy. Thank you, my friend.
See
Love
you.
It.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Paul Charchian, everybody, at paulcharchian.com. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team 980.com.
Jaden, your name has been everywhere right now with the highest number of jersey sales over the weekend and just all the different types of stats. How do you just manage staying focused while hearing all of that around your name and the popularity?
Yeah, I mean, thank God to be able to be in that position, be able to impact people's lives and stuff like that. But, man, the main thing, man, that's football. How can I get better each and every week, not get caught up in what people are saying or anything, because none of that really matters, because I could be playing good and playing bad and people be thinking the opposite. So it's staying level-headed, go out there and just focus on what's up, what's now, and be where my feet are.
There's your quarterback, Jaden Daniels, yesterday during quarterback press conference today. Today you get Cliff Kingsbury and Joe Witt Jr. An easier Thursday coordinator press conference day today for the defensive coordinator. Much better in terms of the overall performance on Sunday against Arizona. It will be interesting to see what Cleveland has, health-wise, coming in for the game on Sunday. The injury report yesterday was kind of interesting in that you had players on Washington's list that I don't know were necessarily expected. Brian Robinson Jr. with a knee injury didn't practice. Zach Ertz was more of a rest day. Allegretti has an ankle injury. He's played well, did not practice. And some guys limited like Noah Brown and Percy Butler as well. For Cleveland, Myles Garrett right now, just has a sore Achilles. Now, it didn't bother him last week. He had 2 sacks and 4 pressures. But wouldn't it be awesome to see him somehow take a week off for this game? Nick Chubb was brought back. They got the 21 days to reactivate him. I don't know what the plan is there. We were going to have a Cleveland guest on, but I guess Cleveland changed their media stuff today. So we'll follow up on that tomorrow with Ben. But, Ford's a pretty good back. He's not Chubb, obviously, and it would be Chubb's first game back since last year's season-ending injury. But that was Jaden Daniels, being where your feet are, understanding that things change pretty quickly, what people are saying now, throw 2 games together of 2 picks and a fumble and a loss, and then, a much lower completion percentage and a couple of third down misses and a loss, and now, the conversation shifts. It's just the NFL. It happens that way. Can't mistake, and you can't, look away from or just, completely discount because it's a small sample size what we've seen in the first four games, because he's capable of that. But there's a lot at work here, and the offensive coordinator has had something to do with it. He was asked yesterday about the process of building the offense with Cliff Kingsbury, which Dan Quinn had said earlier in the day that there was a lot of collaboration on the development of what they were going to do offensively this year during the offseason. This was Jaden Daniels talking about that.
Dan was talking a little bit about how as you guys were kind of building this out with Cliff, you brought in some concepts that you were really comfortable with at LSU. What was sort of that process like with Cliff and kind of building the offense to where it is?
Yeah, Cliff is very open-minded. Anything that he feels is going to work, or he'll try it out, man. And kudos to Cliff being selfless, because obviously, it could be that type of person, like, man, this is my system, this is how we're going to run it, this is how we're going to do things. But he's just back there. He gives us the freedom to go out there and play ball.
There's no doubt that what Cliff Kingsbury has given Jaden Daniels has made him very comfortable in these first 4 games, which is exactly what a good coordinator should do. He should take the talents of the young player and build around those talents. You don't fit, you don't push your scheme on a quarterback with a lot of ability like Jaden does and put him into square peg round hole situations. That's something that was really emphasized by Quinn on that as well, and perhaps was one of the reasons they hired him. We've seen a lot of up-tempo. We've seen a lot of no huddle. We've seen a lot of understanding what defenses are going to be on the field personnel-wise, and kind of matching up against that with plays that he's comfortable running. Love that. Lastly, I wanted to play this from Jaden yesterday. He was talking about, or he was asked about, like, the possibility of a really good home crowd Sunday. And he doesn't know what the history is of essentially playing road games at home. But he was asked about what it would be like to have, you know, a really strong home field environment, home field advantage on Sunday. Here's what he said.
Played one home game so far, but after these past two games with Bengals and Cardinals, I think there's a lot more energy around the fan base and around the folks that are showing up. What can a good home crowd do for you, and what's your expectations for what that stadium's going to be like on Sunday?
Hopefully sold out. And I was kind of spoiled, you know, within the college scene of, you know, LSU and, you know, the SEC and stuff like that. So, I mean, just going back to that, man, just the home field advantage. Being loud, being on the field when the defense is on the field, just giving us that energy as you walk in the stadium. You feel that energy. You feel everybody's there. You want to put on a show. So, hopefully it's sold out and we're able to go out there and perform in front of the fans.
So, I am hearing, and I'm sure most of you probably are following this, that this could be a really good crowd Sunday. And I'm not talking about a really good crowd in numbers. I'm talking about a really good Washington crowd. You know, there are days to come down the road, schedule-wise. You know, Pittsburgh, you know, here in Landover on, what day is that? November 10th. You know, Chicago travels well. We'll see what happens on the 27th. Clearly, the Eagles and the Cowboys games, but this could be a really good crowd. And Dan Quinn was asked about this yesterday, and I thought his answer was really self-aware. I loved his answer. I can't play it because we don't have it, but I'm going to read it to you. He said about home field advantage and the potential for it. He just talked about how, you know, it's an advantage, you know, when things really get rocking. He says it's a huge advantage for the team because as loud as it can get, silent cadences, all that stuff goes with it. It's an absolute blast. The energy goes through the roof. And then he says, quote, that's what we'll dig for and keep battling for it. And the better we can play, the more we can create that together. And then it becomes, man, this is a really hard place to play when you tie all of those things together. That is a guy that isn't, you know, asking for it, demanding it, lecturing about it. This is a guy that said, essentially, that's what we'll dig for. That's what we'll keep battling for. The better we can play, the more we can create that together. He understands they've got to earn it. You know, that is somebody, and I don't know if he just knows that from his, you know, playing in this stadium as an opponent's coach, because clearly when he was here with the Cowboys, it was a home field advantage much of the time for Dallas, if not split, best case. You have that sound? Yeah, I mean, I just read it, but go ahead and play it for everybody, because I want you to hear, because I think the tone's important too.
And you've played in Washington when the Cowboys have had great road crowds here. I wonder what it would mean for you now here to have a good home crowd, get a real home field advantage with the offense.
Yeah, and so no difference to anybody else, but just the home field crowd, like anywhere that I've been that really got rocking, like it's a huge advantage, you know, for the team, because as loud as it can get and silent cadences and all that goes with that, it's just an absolute blast. The energy, you know, goes, you know, through the roof. So that's what we'll dig for and keep, you know, battling for it. And you know, the better that we can play, you know, the more we can create that together. And then it becomes like, man, this is a really hard place to play when you tie all of the things together.
Yeah, I mean, Ron Rivera at one point basically lectured the media to be more supportive. Remember that? And, you know, they weren't even playing well. And then when they did play well during a couple of stretches in 2021 and 2022, you know, he was essentially like, you know, I think some players actually said at one point, if you're not with us now, you can't be with us later. I mean, just some stupid stuff coming out of people that haven't been around here and don't understand what needs to be earned. And I love the fact that Dan Quinn spoke in terms of, it's kind of on us to go out and dig for it, to keep battling for it. The better we play, the more we can create that. because that's true. Now, what really is going to help the organization is, of course, winning is paramount, you know, and having the at least chance to go have yourself a season. That's the most important thing. But almost equally important is when you're battling for it, when you're battling for reconnecting with a fan base, with, by the way, you know, in their case, probably trying to find people that have never been fans of the team, younger people. It helps to have a superstar at quarterback. I'm not calling him calling Jaden Daniels that quite yet. I'm just saying it helps to have, in general, a superstar quarterback. And right now, the perception, and, you know, it certainly seems close to reality, but we need more games. The perception is that they do have one. And so, you know, the rest of the schedule, when you have, I mean, your next home game after the Browns, the Panthers, that will be a Washington crowd, clearly. Then you got the Bears. I have no idea what the Bears did in terms of swapping up tickets. We've seen the Bears fans come in, even with, you know, average teams, and be a big part of the crowd. The Steelers game on November 10th, the Cowboys game on November 24th, you know, and then maybe the Eagles game on December 22nd. Those are the ones that still probably have takeover or 50-50 potential. But Sunday should be good. And the weather is supposed to be spectacular. I mean, like a true fall Sunday, upper 60s, low 70s, sunny. God, it seems like it's been raining and cloudy for about a month now. Should be fun. But Jaden comes from Death Valley, where he played the last 2 years. He'll never, ever at the pro level in this town, unless he's around for the new stadium. I don't know. We could certainly, well, hopefully he will be. He'll never see anything like that. There's just, I've been to a lot of sporting events. Death Valley at night for an LSU-Alabama game, which I went to several years ago. That tops the list for me in terms of intense, loud atmospheres. All right, up next, you're going to hear my conversation with Taylor Kelly. He's a former college quarterback. Taylor Kelly is Jaden Daniels' primary non-organization trainer. It's a very interesting conversation. I think you're going to love some of the stuff that Taylor shared with us. That's next.